Well, good afternoon, everybody. This is Heath Wiggins. I'm the host of the Crux Capacitor, and you are listening to our podcast about core values. Welcome back, everybody. I'm glad you're here. My guest today is Andrew D'Onofrio, and he is going to be talking to us a little bit about his core values. Welcome to the show, Andrew.
Heath, great to be with you. Thanks so much.
I'm glad you're here. Thanks. So, when we were talking about core values and doing your pre-interview, as it were, one of the things that came up actually was that one of your core values is empathy. Now, you have an interesting story of how you felt, or how you feel that you came to be an empathetic person, a bit empathetic business leader. Would you tell us a little bit about that?
Sure. Yeah. So I think, Keith, it stems from my very first career. I started out and often joke that I grew up in law enforcement. And I started out very, very young. I was about 19 years old when that happened. And, you're really not prepared for a career in law enforcement at 19. So, and I say that because you really don't have much life experience, although you don't realize it at the time that you're not equipped to deal with issues of domestic violence and mental health issues. But I was smacked with a lesson, if you will. So they found that there was something physically wrong with me. I had a thyroid issue, and there was a rush to fix that because it was going to preclude me from going through the police academy. And what happened as a result of that physical ailment, when things got sort of straightened out, I slipped into a good 2 year, portion of my life from 19 to about 21, where I was really depressed and extremely anxious. And it's a bad combination when you're in law enforcement.
Yeah, I can imagine.
So
And so
that made me,
you,
yeah, that
yeah,
made me
go.
see things. That made me see things a different way. I sort of became aware that at any given time, somebody's carrying baggage, or they're carrying an issue, or they're carrying a worry. I don't think there's any human on the planet that's not. I always say if you want to go to the place where people gather that don't have problems, that place is called a cemetery, because if you're breathing air, you're carrying baggage. So it always caused me that experience, and others through my life caused me to look at human beings from what they might potentially be carrying and the issues they might be struggling with. And I think that really developed that skill, if you will, and I do consider it a skill of empathy.
Right. And so you value that because you actually came through that experience and how that's intersected with doing what you do now. And we'll get into that here in a little bit. But when you really think of empathy, as you've said, one of the things that you see and you believe that's been developed through that struggle and through that process, and then of course through your several subsequent years in the police force and law enforcement, you talk about understanding people's underlying issues. When you were in law enforcement, though, and had this intuitiveness going about, tell me about some of the times that, or if there's even a time that you think that really brought that into crystal clear perspective for you, if you could.
I would say it was almost a daily thing. From the time that I was in a uniform position through the time that I went into the detective bureau into investigations, and then ultimately started a computer crimes unit. Everything from a traffic stop to what somebody might be going through to handling a domestic violence call or an issue with somebody's child, or dealing with youth myself and saying, having to deal with parents of youth in crisis and in trouble. So I always tried to place myself in the position of that other person. It's the kind of job, Heath, where we see people at their worst. By the time law enforcement's involved, you're not seeing people at their best. I mean, there was some community outreach, but generally speaking, you're seeing them at their worst. And I think that for most people in that profession, when you want to be truly effective, you really want to have an impact on people's lives, then you need to see, people for who they are and what they might be dealing with. I mean, I can give you a very poignant example of how that took shape 20 years later, something I had done earlier in my career, if you're interested in hearing that.
Absolutely. Go for it.
So I had an incident about 5 years ago, and I was in a Starbucks, and a gentleman came up to me and he said, "You're a cop, aren't you?" And I said, "That's a red flag, right? You're like, oh no, did I arrest this person?" Right. So I said, "Well, I used to be." I said, "But I'm not anymore." He said, "You don't remember me, do you?" And again, of course, I'm getting kind of amped up. And I said, "No, I don't." He said, you saved me. And I said, I did. And he related a time. And of course, when he started talking about it, I immediately remembered. I was actually off duty. And my wife and I were with our kids in a restaurant. And I heard a commotion outside. And I realized quickly that it was a domestic dispute. And there was this guy and his wife and their one-year-old child were outside. And he was sort of going off the rails. And right. It looked like he was going to get physical. And I was able to pull him aside, talk him through it and say, listen, you know, you're about to change the course of your life and you're about to change the course of your child's life. You have a decision right. to make right now. And so through that experience, he was able to get himself together. And I guess all that time later, he remembered it and he remembered me. And, you know, if nothing else happened in my career, Heath, that would have been worth it. And so I think that skill served me very well there.
Yeah, absolutely. So, but you also showed your other core values right there. We're coming to into full focus. Your other core values beyond empathy, actually, we talked about dependability and leadership. And you actually kind of, you know, you're off duty. So you're showing your dependability that people can use you as a resource or something in a time of crisis, a resource in time of crisis, even when you're not working. You're using your leadership skills, and then you're feeling that empathy that you're going, hey, you know, guy, I've been mad. I've been, you know, in a family situation where I didn't know what I was going to do, but you've got to control yourself. You may not be able to control your emotions, but you've got to control yourself. So I think that's a fantastic example of that. So yes, core values, empathy, dependability, leadership. Those were all your three major ones. And wow, what a showcase of that. So I'm going to have you come back in the next segment, and we're actually going to talk a little bit about how your empathy, dependability, and leadership are being used now and what career choices that you've made lately. And I'll ask everybody to stay tuned. You've been listening to The Crux Capacitor with Heath Wiggins and my guest, Andrew D'Onofrio. Thank you.
Hey, listeners, are you newly engaged and looking for the perfect wedding officiant? Well, you've literally been listening to him for the last few minutes. That's right. Heath, the host of The Crux Capacitor, is a licensed and ordained minister that performs weddings in the Charlotte, North Carolina metro area. Go to nuptiallyyours.com or call 614-561-9681. That's nuptiallyyours.com or 614-561-9681 for more information. Let Nuptially Yours and Heath make sure you're nuptially ready for your big day.
Back, everybody, to The Crux Capacitor. I'm your host, Heath Wiggins, and I'm with my guest today, Andrew D'Onofrio. Welcome again. Thank you so much for being here, Andrew.
Thank you, Heath.
Absolutely. So we got talking in the last segment about empathy, dependability, and leadership, and you gave us a glorious example of that in your previous career. Let's talk about your current career. You are a professional development consultant. What does that mean? What does that do?
I know, right? That term consultant always is like, wow, that's so all-encompassing. So you know, as we talked earlier, I like to focus on what I call the model of DIG. And what that stands for is develop, improve, and grow. And the way it translates in this current business is I think of it, and what I try to sort of position myself as is the DIG specialist for your business, your people. And the way that really practically translates is I come in and I do, you know, corporate workshops and education programs and a tremendous amount of professional development and executive level coaching. And, you know, that's how I have this passion for wanting people to get the most out of their careers, the most out of their lives, and certainly business owners to get the most out of their people and provide an engaging and rich environment, because we do spend so much time at work, and be as profitable and as productive as their companies can be.
Yeah. So now, one of the things that I always thought, it was funny, when you say DIG, and I know that's a great acronym, as we said, but you know, you have to dig to build a foundation for anything.
Right.
And, you know, and my grandfather built houses. So I know he was talking, well, we're going to go out and dig the footer or whatever. We're going to pour the footer. We're going to dig so we can build a foundation. So that kind of really rings home with me. Now, workshops, digging, actual consulting, however you want to put it, what does that look like on a daily basis for you, actually?
And I loved it. I love the tee off. We didn't even rehearse this, Heath, and you teed it up perfectly, because you're right. It works really well, because I always say you're either digging in to make yourself better. And that's the proactive approach. You want to get ahead of a problem where you're digging out, and you're digging yeah. out of a sort of a complication that you're in. So on the workshop side, I'll go into companies. Let's say a company's having problems having their people subscribe to the corporate culture and vision. The first thing I'll do is work with the leaders to make sure that we have a clarity on the understanding of what that is. And then we'll do some employee workshops trying to bring them back to, again, even our discussion, Heath, about core values, bring them back to the corporate core values and the corporate culture that they're trying to instill there. Oftentimes, it's working with current leaders, emerging leaders, or new leaders. And that's what a lot of the workshops deal with. Because, you know, to me, everything rises and falls on leadership. And whether you're the leader of a family, whether you're the leader of a division, or you're the leader of an entire company, you have the power, again, to add value and influence those that work for you.
Yeah. So the corporate structure and the corporate values, as we were just, as you were saying, and the core values, I mean, they all go hand in hand. But obviously, you get to be influential in helping people take their own core values and then go, okay, these are the company core values. These are your core values. How do we blend them together and make them a strength for you and make them into true leadership? Now, are there things that you find you focus on more than others when, especially let's single out emerging leadership here. When you work with emerging leaders, what is one of the main things that you focus on as far as foundation, groundwork, et cetera?
Communication skills would probably be one of the most primary ones. Okay. The other thing I also talk about with them, and I even deal with communication skills with well-founded leaders. You know, there's always room for improvement there. Right. You know, how to find common ground with people and how to speak to their hearts. And, you know, because after all, communication is about winning influence, right? We want to, you know, especially as a leader. With emerging leaders, I deal, in addition to the communication skills, you know, we talk about the practical aspects of it. So we'll talk about things about, you know, making the transition from colleague to boss and what are the boundaries that now get set up. But the other part of that is when to assert, not assert authority, trying not to plant the flag too early. And finally, and this is a big one, and a lot of people struggle with it and they don't really talk about it, and that is imposter syndrome. You know, a lot of leaders feel like, oh, at any minute, I'm going to be uncovered and they're going to realize I don't know what I'm doing. Even though you do, it's something we all kind of struggle with, is that imposter syndrome. And, I went through it myself. I went through it in my own career. By all measures, I had a highly productive career. But, you know, there's a little battle and a little demon that's inside our head sometimes. And so with emerging leaders and new leaders, I often address that issue as well.
Yeah, it's an inner saboteur, for lack of a better way to put it. You know, it's that let me go ahead and just set this up to fail because I'm going to do that anyways. And so, well, I think it's very interesting because one of the things when we were having our discussion previously is we really kind of focus in with you on the intuitive of this. And of course we said, you know, we believe that intuitiveness for you has come through empathy and things like that. You're going from a community leadership position and a, position of, you know, you're in a uniform, it's assumed authority. As soon as you walk into a room, whether the people around you like that authority or not, there's somewhat of an assumed authority. How do you now, I don't know how you approach into a room, but, you know, depending on the corporate culture, like you said, you might be in a suit, you might be in khakis and a, you know, branded polo or for whatever, but how do you make that authority work and still use your empathy and your intuitiveness in a corporate setting?
It comes down to results. The only thing I would say, and I understand logically what you're saying, but I've seen so many in law enforcement fail at it. Yeah. So there's implied authority, what is what you're describing. Right. And you have the same thing in corporate America, right? Put what we call positional authority by virtue of your position. But how many times in a culture have you seen they're not the true leader, right? So you might have somebody with position, but somebody has more influence that's even below that person. And, you know, and why is that happening? It's because they've formed connections and relationships. So to me, I don't need or don't feel the need for the implied or positional authority. To me, it's about I'm gonna get that credibility through my past experience, my past clients, my own experience in running a business, and of course, the experience I had in leadership for the overwhelming majority of my law enforcement career. And through the things that I say, and ultimately, hopefully, through the results I get either through training and or coaching.
You're right. And one of the things is you've described basically that makes you the happiest in life is actually bringing value to whatever situation you're in. I mean, you want to bring a value into the family situation, the business situation, the overall scheme of things. And I can see definitely how that would do that. Really quickly, and then we'll wrap this segment up here. Describe when you go into a sales situation, and I know we've talked about what do you do most of the time in your business? Are you actually doing the coaching or are you out doing sales development? And, you know, and every business owner, we have kind of both of those hats here. But when you go in that sales development or that business development role, and you're talking to the leadership of a company, what is one of the exact, one of the things is, how do you pitch something that you say I'm bringing value? When you say I'm bringing value, what is it that you say you're bringing?
It depends the circumstance that I'm brought in. Of course, obviously, if somebody made a referral because they know of a business owner that's struggling with something, or they know of a colleague who has an employee that's having some development problems, professional development problems, and they'll say, hey, I have a good coach for you. The sale is kind of easy in my mind, only because I can talk through what we can anticipate as a result. I won't take a client that doesn't want to be coached, if they want to have their employee coached or, what the level of leadership, but you always want a willing participant. But if I were to go in sort of dry, if somebody would say, listen, we're thinking about doing some professional development training, tell me what you can do. It would be, I would say it'd probably be industry specific, but I would say my goal is to develop your leadership and your people to the extent that you're creating an environment here that's engaging and people want to come to work and people want to work for you and they're subscribed and they're on board with the mission. And that's the kind of result that I'll bring, whether it's through a workshop or whether it's through coaching. I like to say I get people out of their own way. I get organizations out of their own way and ultimately make a very productive environment so that the business thrives and ultimately, as a result, the staff, employees, and leadership thrive.
Awesome. All right. We are going to wrap up this segment and we'll be right back. We're going to talk to Andrew some about current events in the next segment. Please stay tuned. No, your ears aren't playing tricks on you. And yes, that really is Christmas music you're listening to. But stay with me because I really do have a point. Now, I realize that not everybody stays in the Christmas spirit all year long like myself. You may not wake up, hop in the shower, and sing Joy to the World at the top of your lungs instead of some top 10 bubblegum pop ballad. But that doesn't mean you don't like giving gifts. In fact, if you're all grown up, you've probably realized the great transition from receiving to giving gifts. And that's what Christmas any time of the year means for you. Or at least I hope it does. And I hope it does because Heath Wiggins, that's me, and the Crux Capacitor are working on bringing you gifts that speak to the heart through our new Shopify store called Porter's Emporium. You really can grow up and still believe in Santa Claus. You just get to believe that you are Santa Claus. Please stay tuned for more information right here on the Crux Capacitor. Remember, that's Porter's Emporium, the gift of the Magi all year long. And now, back to our show. Well, welcome back, everybody, to the Crux Capacitor. I am Heath Wiggins, your host, and my guest today is Andrew D'Onofrio. Thank you again so much for being here, Andrew. I appreciate it.
Oh, it's great, Heath. Thank you.
I'm happy to have you. So we talk on this segment, we talk about current events, and you have the very unique perspective of the background in law enforcement. And of course, you probably understand when you see a situation unfolding on TV, when there's a special alert or breaking news, you probably understand it as far from a law perspective, a law enforcement perspective, better than anybody else. But I want to talk to you really quickly about the issues of the school shootings. When you were in your law enforcement position, first of all, did you ever come in contact with anything like a mass shooting?
No, fortunately, I haven't.
Okay. All right. But from your perspective, then, and we've talked a lot about core values here again and how intuition can become a really key skill. But when you're looking at these situations and you see these officers in these situations trying to deal with this life and death matter, what are some of the things that run through your head when you're watching these things unfold?
You know, I get so concerned with why we're here. And you hear various statistics saying that the problem hasn't gotten worse, and you know, people opine about that. I just don't remember a time, and I'm 50 years old now, Heath, and I don't remember a time, and I know we're in a mass media market, but I don't remember a time hearing all this and or having these issues since obviously Columbine. And you know, I wonder, are we able to place these problems in one individual bucket and say, you know, this is the root cause of it, or is there a larger perspective we need to take? But certainly it's alarming, right? We can't have kids going to school and being afraid. I mean, I do some youth education, and it's a crazy thought, but even when I start an assembly program, I'll think to myself, gosh, I hope nothing happens in this school today. And I'm a
Right.
rational adult. Could you imagine a child in school? I mean,
Right.
it's something.
Right. Yeah, and that's one of the things that I've thought about often. It's just one of those things where, you know, something will happen. And so I had a situation, and just throwing this out here, and you'll appreciate this from law enforcement, but I had a situation once where I was in a dark theater, and I was in watching a movie, and actually ended up with and just right in front of me, the row in front of me, I was in a row by myself, but the row in front of me was several young people. I had five or six young people. And all of a sudden, in the middle of the movie, the law enforcement kind of stormed in and surrounded all of us, with each one of us with a gun to our head, literally. And like, stop, don't move, but you know, blah, blah, blah. And kind of everybody just really was really startled by the whole thing. And through the process, they ended up getting one person. And I know they surrounded all of us to just keep us immobile and everything like that. But it was very interesting. It became such a matter for me where I didn't like sitting in a theater. It scared me to be in a theater, you know, and not be in a perspective where I could see other people. If I went into a theater for a while, I had to be able to see other people. And I certainly don't blame the law enforcement through that process. But I often think about, if I had a problem going to a dark theater just to watch a movie, what are these kids thinking now when they're seeing this playing out in front of them? So I think you create a great perspective there. Now, from your perspective, though, is this a need for more law enforcement? Is this a need for mental health, or is this gun control? Where does that fall?
Yeah, I don't think you can legislate your way out of this problem. You know, and it's funny, my position on gun control, it jumps back and forth, and I know that sounds wishy-washy and non-committal, but I often think about public shooting sometimes. And you know, as a retired law enforcement officer, I have the ability to carry a gun in retirement as long as I meet the qualification standards,
Right.
anywhere in the country, anywhere the American flag flies. And I don't often, but I do sometimes. And I often think that, you know, good guys with guns is a good thing to prevent this. And we've seen that take place. But more importantly than an actual incident, I don't think additional law enforcement helps it. I do like the fact that you have school resource officers and law enforcement in the school. But the reality is that, you know, when somebody's determined, it's not going to become an entire save mission. And what I mean by
Right.
that is you're not going to prevent loss of life per se. You'll minimize loss of life. So then you have to look at the problem from another perspective, and that is it a mental health issue? Is it an issue of violence has become so commonplace that our youth that are struggling with whatever issues, mental illness struggles that are challenging them, that violence has become so commonplace they don't realize the significant impact of it. And again, I'm not anti-video game, I'm not, but is there something to that? And I think professionals in that field have to start to look at some of that causation and say, why are our youth today sort of so aloof and so immune and unaffected by, you know, violence? And you know, they don't truly realize the impact and value of life in those situations. It's kind of frightening.
Yeah, it's very frightening. And I think probably it does boil down to the mental health aspect of it, because we have to begin with the brain and the heart, as it were, and build from there. Because, you know, even to, from my perspective here, to go biblical, out of the abundance of the heart, the mouth speaks. So out of whatever's going through the brain and whatever's going through the body, what is in there, that's going to come out. That's what we show out. And unfortunately, there doesn't seem to be, as you just said, that same grasp of reality and impact society.
And I think too, Heath, if we go back to that original core value that we spoke about earlier, and that is of empathy, that it's important, I think, for our youth to, number one, be taught this skill, right? To be taught this value, to be taught that blessing of being empathetic with another human being. And it doesn't always mean, you know, that you're just feeling for the person and you know, going to try to understand them. It also means that you intercede when you think somebody needs help. Right. Because at the end of the day, you may not only save the life of that person, you may save the lives of many individuals. And I think that our children need to be also sort of aware of, you know, part of being empathetic and understanding to your fellow classmates, your kids your age, minimizing this cruelty thing. I don't even like to use the word bullying. It seems to me that it sort of draws up this image of a cartoon. It's cruelty. It comes down to cruelty, kids against kid cruelty kind of thing. And that the more we can teach our youth empathy, the more successful we might be in recognizing mental health issues and getting action to take place.
Yeah, absolutely. Andrew, thank you so much for being my guest today on the Crux Capacitor. I've really enjoyed having you on. And
I had a great experience, and I thank you for your for having me on, Heath.
Absolutely. Well, hopefully you will be able to come back and tell us even more about what you have accomplished. I look forward to hearing good things from you. Ladies and gentlemen, you've been listening to The Crux Capacitor, and stay tuned for more.